Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew. On this episode, we welcome back to the pod the CEO and founder of the Providence Cultural Equity Initiative, Raymond Watson. Always great to have two hawks on the pod. This is third Bartholomew Town appearance, including last year's Bartholomew Town Live at PVD Fest. And man, I can't wait to get back to the live event zone because I've heard from some of you. I've got some ideas of my own. I think, we'll feel it out. Nothing too soon. We're not going to do anything outrageous, but at some point down the line, live events will return in general, and certainly some Bartholomew Town live content coming your way. Stand by for that, and stand by for this great conversation with Ray Watson. There's so much going on, and I think specifically if we could just kind of, there's a few things that I'd love to touch on. One thing sort of, we can just kind of start with your take on all of the youth-led activism that has been happening over the last few, really, I guess it's been about a month now. And, what that means for really the world, frankly, but specifically here in Rhode Island, how what that means to have this youth-led movement that's, and I think the images from in your, on your green screen or whatever, I think that's from the 10,000 person protest that we had.
Yes.
That was the most powerful day of my Rhode Island life for sure. You know, and as far as being back here in the last 5 years, I mean, that was the culmination of like, all right, there's hope.
There you go. There you go. And I would say that that right there sums up my feeling about the youth. Hope. There's some hope. I'm kind of a veteran from the activist field here in the city, about 15 years or so, a little bit more. There's been certain times during the course of my work here where you're just like, I was loss after loss after loss after loss after trying to get people to care, trying to get people interested. And what's really beautiful, in my particular opinion, about the Providence activist community as a whole, and there's fantastic activists all around the state, but I cut my teeth here in Providence. It's such a robust and veteran and committed and consistent group of activists. So it's not like there's a protest and then people go back to doing what they're doing. There's a protest followed up by meetings, followed up by other actions, followed up by legislation. So it's a consistent movement forward. And I think that it's allowed youth to come up in a space and an atmosphere where they felt empowered to actually try to change things. And I think a lot of that's missing. I know it was missing for my generation. We were trying to cope with things. And I think we've carried that into our adulthood, trying to cope. And, you know, how do you prepare yourself to talk in case you get engaged with a police officer because you know they can be like this? And, you know, what should I be going to school for because, you know, it's hard for a person of color to get a job. So what type of job should I be looking into? And the youth are like, no, I shouldn't be spoken to at all like that by anyone, particularly not a police officer. I shouldn't have limits on what my career opportunities are. So their mindset's different. They're expecting things that perhaps in my generation we didn't, but they're not just expecting it with their hands up. They're saying, we're here to be committed and put in the effort and the energy to achieve these things so we have a right to. And to me, that's so fantastic. I feel like the OG now, Bill. I'm sitting back, I'm enjoying it, and I'm saying to myself, all right, let me keep my ears to what the youth are saying. Let me keep my eyes to what the youth are doing. And then what can I do to support their movement? I'm not trying to lead it. They don't got to listen to a word that I'm saying. Hopefully, if they were wondering, I can tell them some things that didn't work for us. But that's important to know, too, so they don't waste their time. Maybe give them some advisement on things that they might want to consider. But I'm happy to just play my position. Great job, youth. I salute them. And how can we support what the world that you all are building? Because it's going to be a lot different than the one that I grew up in.
Yeah, Generation Z and then the younger millennials, they just have like a natural lack of conditioning or lack of obsession or caring for a lot of the institutions that even me as an older millennial, you know, I looked at post 9/11, you know, people will be saying, oh, you're some kind of unpatriotic, know, radical, if you had any kind of specific ideas. And even in Brooklyn, New York, where I was living, you know, the Occupy movement, all of that, you know, was still nowhere near as aggressive in terms of what's possible to change.
Yes.
You know, it was very much about, well, we have classist systems that we need to undo. Now it's much, it's gone, the whole entire system needs to be revisited. And the youth today seem totally undaunted by that challenge. And we're talking about kids as, for the most part, you're talking about 13 through 16 year olds, sometimes as young as nine, that are speaking with more passion and information than I think I had now. So it's incredible.
Absolutely. Incredible. Absolutely.
All right. So yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, it's just it's a new spirit of, and by the way, the politicians that, the political leaders that are starting to realize this, you know, they have no choice but to play into it, whether it's the governor bringing up faith on, you know, to a press conference the other day based on the Providence plantations or whomever. Yes. And pretty soon Speaker Mattiello is going to have the youth knowing that because they're booing him at the rallies, they're booing him by name. So pretty soon he's going to have to play into that crowd that he was able to ignore for so long.
Yes, absolutely. And to that point, Bill, you know, we actually started a campaign last week, Providence Cultural Equity Initiative, based upon what Speaker Mattiello's comments were about not being sure if there was slavery in Rhode Island. And that's outrageous. So as an adult, my thing was, okay, I could get out there and march and protest and all that against Mr. Mattiello, but the youth are going to do that. So what can we do? So our thing was, let's put together a fundraiser so that we can have resources and supports to actually ensure that our state leadership and the general public is properly educated in these things. Because the more I speak to especially older generation Rhode Islanders, I realize a lot of them have bought into this narrative that Rhode Island was always this fantastic place where people came for freedom and democracy and to believe what they wanted. And yeah, that was part of it. But there was also a lot of very negative things that were going on. Let's take the name plantations for a second. I keep hearing this story, oh, plantations, that was just farming, that was the original colony. And I'm like, yeah, all that's great and dandy. But who was working on those farms? And it was American Indians. After the King Philip's War, they either got enslaved or forcibly indentured onto these plantations. And this is why a lot of the Indians around here, most of them have English names. Because how do you go from Connecticut, Humham, Soconinco, Magnus, Occupatonawit, Conanchet to my I don't know how many great-grandfathers, but the Reverend Samuel Niles. How do you do that? Well, your people are stuck on someone's plantation. They're given the last name of that person who owns the plantation so that everyone knows whose Indians you are. And then you're told, you know, if you Christianize, if you civilize, then perhaps there'll be more opportunities for you. So when we try to just sanitize our history, we erase the experiences of an entire population that's still here, and it allows us to sit in this false sense of pride about ourselves when we should really be reflecting upon the fact that, hey, that was a terrible time period. How do we make sure we never go back there again? How do we right the wrongs that are still being impacted upon people who were affected by that? And even more so, and this has been my question, why are we picking and choosing which history we're going to acknowledge? When you say, well, that was so long ago, okay, 4th of July was so long ago. Yeah. Gatsby Day was so long ago. But we celebrate that every year. So we can't talk about slavery because it was too long ago, even though it was the fundamental economy of the state. But we can talk about Gatsby Day, and we can talk about 4th of July, even though it was so long ago. I need some logic on why we're picking and choosing, and why we can't just embrace all of our history to make sure that we're comprehensively informed about where Rhode Island's come from, so we know where we're trying to take it.
I'm always amazed by that. I never understood that perspective whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It made no sense to me. I'm lucky I had, growing up I went to Charahoe, and look, you get bombarded, at least I did at the time, bombarded with the narrative of, you know, great Rhode Island was this place where you come for for X, Y, and Z, for religious freedom. It was totally different than the rest of the colonies or something like that. They try to spin it. But then through my own personal exploration, growing up near the, basically on the Great Swamp, and starting to look at the Great Swamp Massacre and work backwards and understanding the Narragansett planters and the fact that everything that you're saying, you go, wow, my life as I know it is essentially a lie. So why wouldn't the state of Rhode Island, and again, it's not about feeling, you can feel an element of guilt, but it's more about just having clarity. I don't understand why people are so opposed to having clarity in their roots.
That's simple. It's Rhode Island history. It's not a separate thing that was apart from Rhode Island's history. This is Rhode Island's history. This is how the state got to where it's at. And what's even more amazing to me, Bill, right? Because I don't do this white thing. People aren't white. They're French, they're Italian, they're Irish, they're English, and they have specific and particular experiences with Rhode Island. I posed a question yesterday. I said, I don't understand why people with Irish backgrounds, Italian backgrounds, Portuguese backgrounds are defending the acts of the English. This is, especially for my Irish brothers and sisters, they did the same exact thing to you in Ireland and over here as well that they did to Narragansett Indians. So why would we get here and jump all on board with protecting that history when it has nothing to do with you? Absolutely nothing. So I'm trying to understand that Rhode Island family right now. And I think that this is a great time to do it because people are being forced to reckon with things that had perhaps been swept under the rug or in the comfort of daily life you didn't necessarily have to see or even acknowledge. You can't really do that right now. You kind of have to be willfully trying to not know. And I don't think that, I hope it's not human nature to just willfully want no. I would hope that human nature would say, hey, wait a minute. So I wasn't taught the correct history, so I don't actually know what took place here. So they whitewashed and sanitized something to feed me. No, I want to know what actually took place here. I want to know the history. I want to be informed as a Rhode Islander so I can educate other people. I'm hoping that that's where people are at, and I'm hoping that people aren't doing the ostrich in the sand thing where you can see their entire body, but their heads, you know, I don't want to see it. I don't believe it. It's not going on. Clearly it is. So,
yeah, no, it's amazing. It's interesting. I was speaking with on a conversation with Sal Montero, Nonviolence Institute, a couple of nights ago, and he laid out a really interesting way to evaluate this. You know, you think of, let's say, Rhode Islanders, for example, as a gas tank from empty to full. And the full knob is people who are embracing real history, either 100% or they're just at least curious or they feel compelled to. And then the empty are these people who are, you know, just say, well, we're going to, you know, you're some, again, unpatriotic. You're some kind of, you know, deranged person if you want to change the name of the state. And Sal's point was that, you know, you may never be able to really get those people in the empty spot to move over. But there's a whole lot of people right there about halfway. There's a whole lot of people, maybe about a third of a tank full. Those are the people that need to be, for lack of a better term, brought into the tent, so to speak.
Absolutely.
And when you do that, all of a sudden, bam, you've got the majority of Rhode Islanders thinking about history in a proper manner.
Absolutely. My thought is I'm not here to convince anyone of anything. I can't convince you. How do I convince you? I spend all my time trying to get you to think what I think. And to be quite honest, you're wasting your time trying to do that with me, trying to convince me about anything. My goal is just to make sure that you can't say you didn't know. Someone said something to you about it. Whether you choose to take and look further into that, that's up to you. That's between you and the creator above, because at the end of the day, that's who we're all accountable for what we do. So my job is just to lay it out as I understand it and to be open to learning more about what I think I know now, because we only know what we think we know right now until we learn something that forces us to change how we think. So that's, I think, if everyone just takes that sort of attitude that I know certain things right now, but I most certainly don't know everything. And I'm sure that there are some things out there that I don't know that perhaps would change my perception on what I think I know. So let me be open. Not that I'm going to take it and say, oh, that's what it is. But let me be open to the potential that maybe, just maybe, the way I understand things isn't the way that they actually are. And let's take it from there. Let's take it from there.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
B-Town listeners, it has been an absolute honor and a pleasure to create this platform over the last 2.5 years. And by the way, I don't know if I would have made it 2.5 months as a podcaster if not for your attention and encouragement. Bartholomew Town has emerged as Rhode Island's leading politics, media, news, and culture podcast, and as a go-to source for news and information here in the Ocean State. I just launched a Patreon account where, for as little as $3 per month, you can support the independent journalism, opinion, analysis, and entertainment that the Bartholomew Town podcast has become known for. There's also the opportunity to become a B-Town insider, where you'll receive exclusive content every month. Visit patreon.com/Bartholomew Town or follow the link in the bio. And thanks for all of your support and encouragement. Here's to the next phase of the Bartholomew Town podcast. I lived in Newport for a couple of years when I first moved back to Rhode Island in 2016 through 18 or so. I'm always amazed by the fact that folks there don't, I mean, look, it's a dark history, but it's fairly recent in the grand scheme of things, certainly since the Big Bang or whatnot. It's, you know, it's just like yesterday, but you know, you've got literally a slave market that is now a Yankee Candle store and a this and a that, and it's just been brushed over without really any monuments or any sort of significant acknowledgement. And again, I just don't understand why, when you're whether you're a Rhode Islander or from outside of the state, whatever, I don't understand why you wouldn't want to embrace that history to understand how we got to the point where we are now. Understand that Newport had the deep waters for ports of Lake Bristol, and there was a logistical aspect to it, but then also understand the culture that it created and the names that are still there today throughout the state that are essentially amongst that upper class, for lack of a better term. I just don't get, I'm really at a loss for why you wouldn't want to understand the slave history of Newport.
Sure. And Bill, to your point, and this is why I was given my fellowship in 2016 by the Rhode Island Foundation, and this is where the focus of my company's work has been. That history is of international interest to people. And once again, it's not about shaming, although there is a level of guilt and shame that we should feel just as a state that was where we were at one point. But once again, it's about educating and informing. And if we want to talk economy, because that's what most people usually want to talk, it's a way to attract people here to these spaces to want to know, to physically be in these spots, to engage like we all do when we go to the Pyramid of the Sun in Mexico, when we go to the pyramids in Egypt, when you go anywhere to have that cultural tourism experience of exploring and engaging with the narrative specific to that area, Rhode Island is second to none. But we spend all our time trying to pretend like that's not what happened. Then we end up chasing national trends that don't translate well here. We end up marketing ourselves to an international market of come see our beaches and our sailboats, when the whole continent is surrounded by water. So everyone has beaches and sailboats. But come to Rhode Island, the smallest state in the union, because we have beaches and sit. We're telling the wrong narrative because we're afraid to embrace our history. And if we embrace it, if we're bold, if we're intentional, if we're brave, if we allow the people that are still here that were impacted by that to tell their stories, there's no limit to the potential that Rhode Island has to reinvent itself internationally, to draw international attention and tourism here, and to be the one sharing our true and comprehensive narrative. Because I always say Rhode Island is impactful upon the world. If it's not for the King Philip's War, which was based a lot here in Rhode Island, there's no U.S. after that. If Rhode Island doesn't start Gatsby Day, there might not be an American Revolution. If Roger Williams isn't promoting freedom of speech and freedom of religion, perhaps democracy's not where it's at in the world right now. So when you're talking Rhode Island history, you're talking world history. And of course, if Rhode Island isn't have the top 10 slavers in U.S. history, the transatlantic slave trade's not what it was. So Rhode Island, once again, is at the epicenter of world history, good and bad. And why aren't we telling that story to people who want to know about it?
100% couldn't agree more. All right, moving on to like more of the logistics here of the Providence Plantation's name. Mayor Alorza last Friday called a press conference. He announced an executive order in the city to remove Providence Plantations from documents, websites, citations, so on and so forth. That was followed up by Governor Mundo on Monday, who did the same thing. And, you know, what struck me about those news conferences were the Councilor Mary Kay Harris's address at the at the Providence press conference, Senator Metz's address at the governor's press conference, just the, you know, several folks who were just trying to say, hey, wait a minute, can't, for those of you out there who can't wrap your head around why we should change the name, just take a second to employ some basic empathy and understanding and listening. Do you get the sense that the state at large, when it goes to the ballot, because it looks like it's going to go on the ballot this fall, that there's going to be enough momentum to make, unlike 2010 when it lost 4-1 on the referendum question, that the referendum question will swing, Rhode Island voters will approve the name change to drop Providence Plantation? Do you think that momentum's there now?
So I'll give a little bit of context in terms of the last time it came around. One of the major issues was that you had individuals from the communities that are impacted who were going around kind of sharing a different perspective on about why the name should stay. So that undermined a lot of the work that we were doing in terms of trying to get across to people why the name should change and what the impact was. I think this time around, because of the general atmosphere that's going on of, oh, wow, there is racial injustice. Oh, wow, there are people being impacted right here. Oh, wow, there's a heck of a lot of people who are upset about things. Once again, maybe my perception of how things are isn't correct. I would hope that this time around we would see something different. But once again, we're in Rhode Island, Bill. You know how it is, brother. You know what I'm saying? Like, it really doesn't matter. Rhode Island does what it wants. So I want to be hopeful. I'm always hopeful. That's why I continue to stay in the fight in whatever capacity I can. But I also want to give credence to the fact that this is Rhode Island. It's just Rhode Island. So we'll see. I hope so. For those out there who are into respect and dignity for everyone, I would say be out there and voting to change the name. For those of us who want to ignore people's history and celebrate the fact that Indians were slaves and forced indentured, go ahead and vote to keep the name. That's the only place I can be at with it.
That's the most accurate version of that I've ever heard. You know what I mean? That those two sentences right there, you know, pretty much sums it up. All right, last couple of minutes here. You know, your work in general, what are you up to? Because you're such a valued community leader. I've watched a lot of forums that you've been a part of, whether it's Prism or other groups where you've advised youth on, you know, legal strategy and things of that sort. So I think that, you know, I don't know if I'm sure many people in the state know, but your work extends into a lot of different areas of progress, and not in the context of political progressive, but in the context of moving the state forward. So what are you up to these days?
So in general, my work is always in the field of community development. That's what I got my master's in, community planning, concentrating in housing and community development. And that's just a very comprehensive field. So specifically what my focus is in particular cultural development and cultural equity work. That's what I do with the Providence Cultural Equity Initiative. Part of that is, you know, sharing the comprehensive history of the state. We're also getting into monumentalizing, because we have all of these figures up there that kind of celebrate a particular history and a particular narrative. And we're saying, well, A lot of them shouldn't be there, but B, if they're going to be there, these need to be there as well. And this is to help change the psyche of people when they're in the state, when they grow up in the state, to at least know that this history exists. So we're focused on that. The company has chartered another arm, the Institute for Social Cohesion, that's doing a lot of what they're calling anti-racism work. But we call it social cohesion. It's the difference between negative peace and positive peace. Negative talks about what you're against. The positive talks about where you're trying to go. So when people are saying anti-racism work, we're saying social cohesion work. And looking at that through the theories of social cohesion, looking at some particular philosophies we've created and developed around social cohesion, and then really examining race and racism, from a legal perspective, from a historical perspective, and from a social perspective, so that people have a comprehensive understanding of what it is and how to impact it. Outside of that, I'm in law school right now, trying to figure out how we address things from a legal perspective, because that's a lot of the issue as well. Us just not being informed about how the laws impact us, how to change them, or even how to engage with them. So I try to take all of those different elements and apply them in spaces where I see that there's opportunity in the state, because not only have I grown up here, but this is where my people have been for forever. So regardless of what the name of these lands are, I'm invested in them. And I want to see everyone here doing well. And I believe that everyone can be doing a lot better if we understand our true history, respect each other's narratives, and then know how to properly engage. So like I said, right now, the youth are doing such a fantastic job. There's no need for me to be out there protesting and marching and trying to organize that. They've got that. So older Ray now with the gray in his beard, what else can you be doing to support the movement? We shouldn't be stuck with what we were doing 20, 15, 10 years ago. If so, then the movement stagnated. When you have young people with powerful voices, why am I trying to grab the mic too? Let them speak. And what did they say when they were speaking? Oh, okay. Let's just get really controversial. There was a situation that took place last Saturday down at the Black Lives Matter Rhode Island where the youth took the megaphones and they were like, no, we don't respect what these individuals are doing. We don't want them speaking on our behalf. We don't want them representing us. So I felt obligated to say something as an adult. And I did that on Monday on Facebook. And this was conversation that adults were having. So I'm saying to myself, okay, if adults are having conversations about the questionability of a group that's not associated with the national movement, that hasn't been engaged here in Providence at all, that really no one from the activist community, the veteran activist community knows, and now the youth are voicing their concerns about it. Adults, why aren't we saying something about it? Why are we leaving the youth to fight that fight? That's the role we should be playing. And in my opinion, we should have had conversation with these other adults before the youth needed to get there. So my work right now and my focus is with my skills, with my experience, with the opportunities I've been given, what can I personally do to help move this current movement forward? Not try to start my own, not try to be the voice of it, most certainly not try to figure out how to lead, because the youth are leading. So what can I do with what I have to add to what's already going on? And if I add, and Bill, you do a fantastic job, brother, of adding what you can add. If everyone adds what they can add rather than try to be something, we all move forward. Everyone goes forward. That's why we, 10,000 people, to your point, Bill, 10,000 people at a march. I didn't organize that. I just helped spread the word and showed up. And everyone did their part in one of the biggest, if not the biggest, gatherings in Rhode Island state history. That should be an example and motivation to everyone of exactly what's possible if we all just do our part.
Beautifully said. And, you know, just for the listeners, you know, the Black Lives Matter Rhode Island movement is what you're referencing. It's not affiliated with a national chapter.
No.
And there's some controversy around that group and their seemingly efforts to kind of literally and figuratively take the mic away from the youth organizers.
Yeah. And let me say this too. My comments, the actions of the youth, that was not a knee-jerk reaction to anything. Many of us know the good brother, Kobe Dennis. We had had some issues with how they presented themselves at the press conference with the governor a few weeks ago. In particular, I was highly, highly questioning the integrity of their leader, Gary Dancer, when I heard him thank John DiPietro for giving him a...
I couldn't believe it. I turned my radio off. I was like, wow, where are we? What bizarro world are we in right now?
So right there, Kobe organized a group of prominent voices from the local Black community. I don't like referring to myself as a leader. I think that I lead. And I think that anyone has the ability to lead. And I think in leading, you have to also know when to follow. So I don't like to be called a leader. I think I lead when it's appropriate. So I'm going to say some prominent voices from the local Black community. He asked me to moderate, and we invited these individuals in and gave them a platform to just let us know what they were doing so that with integrity, we could say to the rest of our networks, people that, you know, put their trust and faith in us to be voices for them, yeah, this is an initiative that you should support. We couldn't get a clear understanding of what their mission statement was. We couldn't get a clear understanding of what their vision was. It was kind of scattered and all over the place. It seemed to me like if you were sitting, if I as a person of color was sitting in a room with a older, rich white people and I wanted to hit them with one-liners and zingers because I know they don't know anything, it seemed like that. At one point, they actually tried to take credit for the highway protest in 2013 when people, and I checked it right at the meeting. I said, that's not what the leader of Black Lives Matter did. He didn't organize that. And he tried to tell me he did. So right there was an issue going on because you're not clear on any of your business elements that you should have if you're going to be collecting money. If you're going to be collecting money, you should have a mission statement. You should have a clear vision. You should be able to articulate to people specifically what it is that you do so they know how to support and talk about you to their networks. And ultimately what we said to them was, if you can't answer these questions in-house with us to the people who want to support you, how are you going to do it when you get out there with the people who don't want to support you? And you can't represent us. You have to tighten some things up. You need to tie some of the strings together before you get out here on our behalf and speak on our behalf, especially not even being from the Providence community. We don't need new leaders to come in to this community here. We need you to figure out where you can add to what's going on. So that's where we were all at before that debacle last Saturday. And there comes a point where you can't do fake unity. Fake unity keeps everyone from moving forward and allows people to be taken advantage of. At this point in my professional career, I understand the importance of optics, but they're not going to keep me from addressing an issue that's going on. And if our community doesn't like all of our dirty laundry out, then clean it up before it gets put out there. Address this nonsense. Check these people who aren't allowing our youth to speak. Be the voices for them that we're saying we want to be so that it doesn't get to the point where we have to blast a Black Lives Matter Rhode Island on Facebook and social media. And from my voice to everyone who's listening out there, don't support Black Lives Matter Rhode Island. That's like someone creating McDonald's Rhode Island and then saying, oh, but we're not associated with McDonald's. And then when you go there and the fries aren't the type of fries that you're used to, telling you, oh, you're just hating on new entrepreneurs. I don't understand. No one would accept that craziness. These aren't the fries that I ordered. I only came here because you said you was McDonald's. I have no idea what a McDonald's Rhode Island is. Why would you associate yourself with McDonald's if you're not actually a part of McDonald's? And I'm challenging all of the people out there donating as well. Other than the fact that they call themselves Black Lives Matter, why else are you supporting them? What's their track record of success? What have they done here? Who are these people? Where do you know them from? Would you take your money and just throw it at a haphazard investment opportunity without doing research on it?
Right.
Would you just buy a home that you saw someone talking about without researching, you know, what its history is and if you can actually purchase it lawfully? Would you do any of that? No. Then why are you doing that with something as important as community development and community change? Don't support them just because they stole the name Black Lives Matter. Support them because they have a track record of success. Support them because they've been impacting. Support them because they've been doing this work for a while. And if they haven't, give your money to the people who actually have, because you're wasting it. And I personally don't want to hear from people who donate to that org when nothing gets done that you donated for. Oh, see, that's why you can't support the Black community. No, that's why you get for ruining your investment by not checking on the people you were giving money to. I don't know these people. Most of the people that I know don't know these people. They haven't been around. Don't support them. Stop choosing leaders for our community. Stop hopping on a national bandwagon because you feel bad. And take some time to get to know actually who's doing the work in the community so you can make sure that where your money goes, you get the most bang for your buck.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hey friends, a great way that you can support the pod is to leave a rating wherever you're listening right now.